Church, glad you made it after the time change and everything. I'm supposed to have a time change joke, that's all I got, so that's the best I can do, but thanks for being here. Just to kind of back up what Tim said, you probably heard in the video, Mike said you've increased your giving to us. I think we announced it at the time, but at the beginning of this year, we decided to increase our giving to every mission that we support. So once again, just thank you for that, and I also bring that up because I would just ask that you would pray for a few of us that are headed to Show Me Christian Youth Home, which is one of our missions. Some middle school and high school students and a couple brave adults are headed there over the next 2 days to try to get some work done for them. So just pray that we would be a blessing to them and that we'd be able to serve them. And just proud of those students for giving up some of their spring break time to do that. So really appreciate that. We have been in a series called Desperate for God, and we are continuing that today with a sermon that's desperate for his likeness. In other words, desperate to become like Jesus, to be changed into who he is and be more and more like him every day. And this may be a difficult sermon when you hear the word change. I mean, that immediately is just kind of a dirty word for some people, right? We don't like change. Some people are more receptive to it than others, but for the most part, we are hesitant to change. We don't like to do that, and there's a few reasons why that we'll talk about here in a second. There's this cartoon I found that I think does pretty well about explaining. Sometimes we say we want change, but when it comes time to actually make those adjustments in our lives in order to change, that's when we kind of start to back away, right? And there's a few reasons for that. I think one of them is that change is uncomfortable. We're creatures of habit. I think if I had a sign for every person in here this morning with your name on it, if I had come in before church started, I think I could have put a sign on your chairs and probably gotten 90% correct of where you all sit, okay? And I'm not even in here that often on Sunday mornings. Not only that, I think you probably park in the same spot. I know a lot of you do, or at least pretty close. Maybe if someone gets to your spot first in the parking lot, you just slide over one. But most of you, I could go out and show you where some of you park. Not only that, it's funny, we talked in Sunday school this morning about this. Not realizing that I would be talking about it in the sermon, the students started talking about donuts. I know some of the donuts that you guys eat each morning because there's only two or three certain kinds, and some of you make a beeline for the donut because that's the kind that you want, and Sunday morning would not be the same if you didn't get your, you know, strawberry icing donut or whatever the case may be. So we're creatures of habit. We don't like to be uncomfortable in our routines. Change is not only uncomfortable, it's also scary sometimes. I mean, by nature, it's doing something we've never done before or experiencing something we've never experienced before, and sometimes that can be scary. The story is told of a village in the late 1700s near Paris. The townspeople got together, and they were going to test out this idea they had about basically trying to make a hot air balloon, you know, rise. This is kind of new. No one has ever done this before, or at least tested it out on purpose before, maybe. So they have this large balloon, and they've got the balloon, you know, anchored to the ground, and they light this fire, and then they release it, and they watch as it ascends thousands and thousands of feet above them, and they all cheer, and they're excited, and just like what would always happen, the balloon floats away, and they're excited. They've done something that they maybe don't even know, but is historic, right, in terms of human flight. They've kind of taken the first step towards this. And so the balloon floats miles away and starts to descend after the fire goes down. And it comes and it rests in a field where it's met again by another group of people. But this time the group is not excited to see this fire in the sky that they don't know what it is. This time it's met by a bunch of villagers with pitchforks who immediately attack the balloon and rip it apart because obviously fire falling from the sky is evil and They're scared because they've never seen anything like this before. So change is uncomfortable, and it's also scary sometimes. Not only that, change is just hard. If you've ever tried to maybe quit a bad habit, like, you know how difficult that can be. I don't know, biting your nails or any sort of bad habit, something that you've done for a long time. Whenever you try to be intentional about changing that, it's not easy to get rid of it, right? Maybe it's starting a good habit. You've read or you've heard that 21 days is all it takes. You know, you can start a good habit in your life as long as you do it and you try and it fails, and that's typically how it goes because it's hard. Maybe it's a diet. We had the men's event a few weekends ago, and I got home and I was just talking with Mallory and telling her about some of the things, and it just kind of crossed my mind. She's like, "What'd you guys do? What'd you talk about?" I was like, "Oddly enough, at a men's event, we talked a lot about diets, which not what I expected, but I guess that's what happens when you reach a certain age, you know." But sticking to a diet's not easy, right? Or maybe it's a workout routine. You decide, man, I'm going to walk every day, or I'm going to start jogging or lifting weights, whatever the case may be. Putting change into our lives and making it actually take root can be really difficult. And that's really what we're going to focus on today, is the hard part of putting work into change. In order to be desperate for God's likeness, in order to change into who he is, the truth is it's going to take some work. And if we're not intentional about the work that we put in, then we're not going to change. We're just going to stay where we're at. So before we get into that, we need to look at a couple things. There's a couple words that we use in church all the time that we probably never use outside of this building, maybe, or at least, you know, within conversations with other Christians. And it has to do with this idea of changing. So the first one is justification. That's basically just a big word of saying that's how we're saved, okay? So the definition, the declaring of a person to be just or righteous before God. So when we come to faith in Jesus, whenever we understand who he is, we believe who he says he is, we understand that we've sinned and we've got this sin that separates us from God, we are convicted of that and we repent of those things and we ask for forgiveness and we put our faith into Jesus and our baptized and joined with him in his death, burial, and resurrection, at that point we are justified. If our heart is in all those things, then we are justified at that moment. We are declared righteous before God. We are clean. Our sin is forgiven at that point. And please understand, because as we're going to go this morning, we're going to be talking a lot about the works that we do and the work that we put into things. Our works have nothing to do with our justification, okay? Our justification is a free gift of God. We are saved by grace through faith, not from anything we've done, but because of everything that Jesus has done. So we're justified in that moment, but that begins our process of the other word that we probably only use in church, and that is sanctification. The progressive work of God to make a believer more like Jesus. So on the day that we are justified and we are changed, we begin this process of, man, I'm clean before God, but I still don't look like Jesus. He's still really far away from what I am like, from my thoughts and my desires and my actions. I don't really look like him. I don't think that's a stretch for most of us, right? We would probably all be pretty willing to say, yes, like I'm far from Jesus. I don't really look like him. And this process of sanctification is us changing into who he is. And that's what we're going to focus on this morning. So we are justified or saved by grace, but we are sanctified through our works. Philippians 2, verse 12 and 13 says this: "Therefore, my dear friends, just as you have always obeyed, so now, not only in my presence, but even more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Put work into your sanctification, in other words. Verse 13, for it is God who is working in you both to will and to work according to his good purpose. So God is the one doing the changing. We're sanctified by him still, but our works have to come as part of that. We're saved through them. Or we're sanctified through them, not by them. But we have to put in work in order to become more like Jesus. And there's a couple ways that the Bible makes it clear how we're to do that. In Romans chapter 8, we're going to spend some time in this passage. The first way that we have to start to change is within our mindset. I saw a quote from Timothy Keller. He's a preacher in New York. And he said, what our hearts desire, our minds justify, our emotions desire, and our actions carry out. So it starts with the heart, but whatever our mind is focused on, eventually we will condone and we will say, it's okay if I just do that this one time. It's just a little sin. If our minds are focused on that, then we'll find a way to justify it, and then our actions will carry it out. And so in order to change to look more like Jesus, we have to have the right mindset. Romans 8, verse 5 says this, for those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on the things of the flesh. But those who live according to the Spirit have their minds set on the things of the Spirit. Now the mindset of the flesh is death, but the mindset of the Spirit is life and peace. The mindset of the flesh is hostile to God because it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it is unable to do so. Those who are in the flesh cannot please God. You, however, are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God lives in you. If anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he does not belong to him. So the mindset that is set on the flesh is focused on gratifying the desires that we have, giving into the physical wants that we have, giving into the temptations that we face and the things that we are tempted to step into and sin. And if our mind is set on those things, if our mind is set on things of this earth, on the pleasures that we get from the things around us, our culture, the temptations that we face, if our mind is set on those things, then it's not set on the Spirit. And this passage says that leads to death. But the Christian should have his mind set on the Spirit, the things that are not of this world, the things that are, as Philippians says, honorable and noble and just and true. That is what our mindset should be set on. Because those things lead to life. And when we get our minds right, we begin to change and we begin to look a lot more like Jesus. With that in mind, Kevin and I were talking this past week just about some ideas we had of how to maybe help put some of this into play. And we started looking. There's 5 weeks from this Sunday until Easter Sunday. And so I began to think, man, it'd be really cool if we could, you know, as a church, try to memorize some verses until Easter. And we're not going to, you know, put a goal on this or anything like that, but what we're going to do, we have some sheets out at the Welcome Center, and I don't know how many, there's probably 100 verses. We're not asking you to memorize all those, don't worry. But what we thought was 5 verses in 5 weeks. That's the challenge. And if you want to do more, please do more. But I think a verse a week is reasonable, understandable, maybe. And hopefully, if we put those things into our hearts and our minds, it will begin to change us, right, into more of who Jesus is. And maybe that scares you. Memorizing is not everyone's thing. I understand that. Some people do it really well. Some people can't do it at all, and I understand that. And so we're not gonna, you know, ask you on Easter, hey, did you memorize your 5 verses? But again, in order for us to change, sometimes we have to put in work and we have to do things that are not easy for us and that are not comfortable. And with that in mind, I think it would be to your benefit to try to do this. A couple ways that maybe would help with this. If you would take a note card and write those verses out, put them on your bathroom mirror or maybe on your kitchen cabinet or somewhere that you're going to see them just throughout the day a couple times, that would go a long way in trying to help remember that. One thing we do that helps me a lot, but what we teach our third and fourth and fifth graders to do, you've seen them up here over the last few months where they recite verses that they learn on Wednesday nights. We give each of them a notebook. We tell them, like, write it down four or five or six times just over and over again, and that process helps implant that into your mind as you are writing it down. Maybe it's having someone else read it out loud to you. Have your child or your spouse or someone just, hey, here's this verse, I want to learn it, and if you read it to me, I think it will help me get it down. And there's all kinds of verses. Most of them are short. Most of them are probably, 12 words or less. And so I really think this could be a great challenge. Not only that, man, we have so much access to Scripture and to sound teaching these days that more so than we've ever had in the history of mankind, right? I mean, technology is frustrating, it can be stupid, and it can get us into a lot of trouble, but at the same time, what if we used it to help sanctify our minds? Find a Christian leader or author or pastor that you enjoy listening to their podcasts or their sermons online. Most of us carry around in our pocket a Bible, or at least have the ability to carry around the Bible. I mean, we have access to God's Word like we've never had it before. What an opportunity we have to get our minds away from the things of the flesh and towards the things of the Spirit. Let's put in work to get our minds more like Jesus. The last passage we're going to look at and where we're going to spend a lot of our time is in Colossians chapter 3. And this passage very similarly starts off with what Paul left off in Romans 8. He says, so if you have been raised with Christ, or in other words, if you've been justified, seek the things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. Again, getting our minds right is the first step. For you died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory. So he lays out this principle of here's what the truth is, and then here's the action. Therefore, put to death what belongs to your earthly nature. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, God's wrath is coming upon the disobedient. And you once walked in these things when you were living in them, but now put away all the following: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and filthy language from your mouth. It says, put to death these things. In order for us to be sanctified, not only do we have to get our minds in the right place, not only do we have to change that, but we have to kill our sin. I don't know who said it, what preacher put it this way, but he said, kill your sin or it will kill you. And man, that is so true. And I don't know what your sin is, if it's something from this list or if it's something that Paul doesn't touch on. But if we're not deliberate, if we're not working hard to attack those things and make sure that we are killing those things in our life, eventually they will kill us, and it will definitely stop us from becoming more of who like Jesus is. Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self. You are being renewed in knowledge according to the image of your Creator. Verse 12, therefore, as God's chosen ones, holy and dearly loved, put on compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving one another if anyone has a grievance against another. Just as the Lord has forgiven you, so you are also to forgive. Above all, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. I would challenge you to look through this list and figure out, or just figure out from your own life, because you know what you struggle with. And don't try to attack all these things at once, but pick out one thing. Maybe it's anger. So you know what? Anger is a problem in my life. And if I don't kill it, I know that it's going to kill me. And so I'm going to attack anger. And maybe that looks like a few different things. Maybe that is, you know what, I get angry when I watch Mizzou lose, and so I'm not going to watch Mizzou lose. Sorry, I had to get that in there. But there's Thursday night, I was watching Illinois, my team, and I was yelling at the TV because I'm not very sanctified yet, and it was a bad deal. And so maybe if you know that that's your problem, then you don't turn the game on because you know you're going to give way to anger. And that may be hard to do, but if we want to be sanctified, sometimes we have to put in hard work. Maybe that means you don't go to the break room at lunch because, frankly, when you do, sometimes you engage in the gossip with everyone else that's there, and you know that's a problem for you. And as much as you want to go in fellowship with your coworkers and get away from your workstation, you know, man, if I enter into that, then I'm going to join with them and I'm going to give way to those things. And if I'm doing that, I'm not attacking my sin. And so you avoid that. I don't know what it looks like for you, but I would challenge you to, again, don't take on this whole list, but pick out one thing. Say, this week, the next few weeks, that's the sin that I'm going to try to kill. And eventually, you will get better at dealing with those things. By God's grace, through the work of the Spirit in your life, if you're putting in the work, those things can improve. I read a story about a man and his wife who they bought land and they had these great plans of building a house where this land sat. Man, this beautiful look from what their porch was gonna, where it was gonna sit, and they were just so excited. And they knew it was gonna take a little bit of work to clear the area, but it really didn't seem that bad. And so they went, and first there were some like big rocks, you know, boulders that they had to clear out. And really, those were pretty easy. You know, they just got some machinery in there and cleared those bigger rocks pretty quick. And then they noticed there's some smaller rocks there, you know, ones that they could pick up, put into a wheelbarrow. And those, you know, it was a little bit of work, but really it wasn't too bad. They eventually got all those moved away, and the land was starting to look a lot better. And then once they had, you know, the really big rocks and the medium-sized rocks gone, they really began to look, and they noticed, man, there's all these, like, little tiny pebbles there. Those things aren't easy to get rid of, and this is going to be a job. This is going to be tedious. We have to bend over and over and spend days and weeks out there picking up all these little rocks to clear this area for what we want. And that's how our process of sanctification works with our sin. Man, sometimes the big stuff, we can get rid of that stuff easily, right? We come and, man, I've been justified. I know I've been saved now. I need to get rid of these big things because everyone knows Christians aren't supposed to do those things. And we clean up our language maybe, or, you know, the things that we watch are like, well, that's probably not something I should be viewing. And so we can get rid of some of those big things sometimes. And then maybe we work on the medium stuff. You know, like, man, it'd be good if I got rid of the anger in my life, the greed, the lust, whatever it may be. Man, sometimes it's just hard to attack those little things. It's hard to attack every area of sin because we think, man, I've cleaned it up pretty good. I mean, I'm a lot better than I used to be. Jesus has done some good things in my life. I can look back and say, man, I've changed a lot. And maybe we stop there and, man, it's just a little sin. It's really not hurting anyone else. those things, if we let them linger, our minds will go to the things of the flesh. And if we don't kill them, they will kill us. And not only do we have to put off those things, as it says in Colossians 3, then we are called to put on those things of righteousness. Again, in verse 12, therefore, as God's chosen ones, holy and dearly loved, put on compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving one another if anyone has a grievance against you. Just as the Lord has forgiven you, so you are also to forgive. Above all, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. Once you begin to attack the sin and kill the sin in your life, then start replacing it with those righteous things, with those holy things. Like, man, I'm not a very compassionate person. I look at people and I just think, man, they probably put themselves in that situation. I don't want to help them out. Or maybe it's kindness. Maybe you find yourself just saying things about people or thinking thoughts about people that just, frankly, aren't very kind. I don't know, but it says if we're being sanctified, we are to put on those things. We are to put on the attributes of Jesus' character, because it's not enough just to strip away the bad. We have to begin to look like who Jesus is by putting on those things. And so after we've taken care of some of those issues, then work on putting on who Jesus is, letting your life be changed and sanctified into him. So as I was thinking about this sermon, and just this idea in general of working, I began to think, you know, this is a congregation that they understand that idea, right? I mean, we are full of people who know how to work. I mean, there's a lot of different careers and jobs in this room, but man, from what I know of most people, this idea of working hard is not an issue for people. I mean, I know most of you, and I mean, I know how much work you put into the jobs that you have, to raising kids, to different things. And so I have no doubt that the idea of work doesn't, I don't think, scare anyone. But what I'm curious about is, are we so focused on putting our effort and our work into those other areas, into our careers and into our families, that maybe we let this idea of working to become sanctified get pushed to the side? Students, are you so focused on getting a good GPA and filling your schedule with extracurricular activities that look good on a resume that you have neglected the work it takes to become like Jesus? Because those are good things, and man, students are some of the busiest people I know. Way more so than when I was in high school. Their schedules are completely full of clubs and sports and schoolwork, and they know how to work hard. But is their work being placed into those things and never being given over to who Jesus is? Parents, similarly, do your kids see you put in time at the office or put in time around the farm or doing your chores? And they see you grind there, but they never see you grind to become like Jesus. Because if we work for those things, but we never work to become like Jesus, then we have missed the point. We can teach our kids a strong work ethic, and we can show them that, man, work is good. That's what we're created to do. You need to work for the things that you want, but if we never show them what it looks like to work for Jesus, then we are failing them. One of the things that I'm so thankful for, man, growing up, most of the mornings looked like me walking into my bathroom and I would see a note card like I talked about on the mirror of different verses that my mom had put up that I knew that she was working on to try to memorize. And man, I would take a shower and I'd be getting ready for school and I'd walk out and I'd see my mom and dad at the table with their Bibles open or with their devotionals open. And man, they put in long hours in other places, but I was so happy to see. Looking back now, I didn't appreciate it then, but looking back now, I was so happy to see that they instilled in me, man, if we want to look like Jesus, it takes effort. We have to go for it. It's not just something that we can hope happens. We don't just get to show up on Sunday morning and get transformed into a new creation. It's something that we have to do. Man, I'm so glad that that is the case. Church, don't miss the opportunity that we have to be changed. We talked at the beginning that change can be uncomfortable and scary and hard, but this change is worth it. This change leads to Jesus. This change leads to getting rid of anger and malice and slander, and it leads to compassion and kindness and humility. Those are things worth changing for. It's worth it. Put in the work, put in the effort, because the prize is Jesus. And there's nothing else that is worth working hard for above that. God, thank you for this morning. Thank you for the work that you do in our lives. God, we're so grateful for your Spirit that convicts us and encourages us and comforts us and leads us to becoming more like who you are. God, help us to be focused on you. Help us to get our minds into a place where they desire what you desire for us and we have the thoughts that you want for us. And God, help us to deal with our sin and to put on the things of righteousness that you have for us. God, we love you. We thank you for Jesus. It's in his name we pray. Amen.
As we enter our time of